Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, they offer sandwiches, salads, and wraps with gluten-free options. More information at SpartanDeli.com. Got more news coming up from National Public Radio. We'll be telling you about some of our recent reads. Kari Hedlund is my co-host today. If you're reading a good book and want to recommend it, text us at 218-326-1234. Our annual Record Store Day sale is coming up Saturday, April 12th at Rail River Folk School in Bemidji. We are accepting Gently Loved vinyl donations through March 28th at our studios in either Grand Rapids or Bemidji during business hours. We are working on a new series that is called Unplugged. What questions do you have about KEXE? Maybe it's about the funding or the standards or how music is chosen. Text us at 218-326-1234. It's 601.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A federal judge is refusing to temporarily block the Trump administration's takeover of the U.S. Institute of Peace. The USIP is a congressionally funded think tank. Its takeover has been led by DOGE. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports some former members of the Institute of Peace have sued, claiming they were unlawfully removed from their positions.
The lawsuit seeks to reinstate the board members who were removed and to block DOGE from further accessing the Institute or its systems. At a hearing in federal court in Washington, D.C., U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell said she was very offended by how DOGE has moved to take over USIP. That includes threatening criminal prosecution and showing up with armed law enforcement to remove senior employees from the building. But Judge Howell says there is confusion in the lawsuit and that she has concerns about its likelihood of success on the merits. She therefore denied the former USIP board member's request for a temporary restraining order blocking DOGE's actions while the lawsuit proceeds. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The Federal Reserve has left short-term interest rates unchanged. Fed Chair Jerome Powell says there is uncertainty in the U.S. economy. He says some of that is linked to President Trump's tariffs. Investors have been rattled because these have been on again, off again. NPR's Maria Aspin says some market instability happened last week when President Trump did not rule out the chance of a recession because of tariffs.
The argument Trump is making is that tariffs will be good for the U.S. long term, and that will be worth any shorter term pain. But most people don't really want to experience any pain, even if it does turn out to be shorter term. So when Powell emphasized yesterday that the U.S. economy is strong and prices aren't soaring up too much yet, at least for the day, that was a pretty reassuring message.
NPR's Maria Aspin reporting. Colorado Democratic Senator Michael Bennett is casting doubt on Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer's future in Democratic Party leadership. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports Bennett stopped short of calling for Schumer to step down.
Schumer has come under fire from House Democrats and within his own caucus for voting to advance GOP legislation that prevented a shutdown of the federal government. Schumer had signaled that Republicans didn't have the votes to advance their spending measure, but later shifted course, arguing the bill's passage was the lesser of two evils. At a town hall in Golden, Colorado, Senator Bennett was asked when he would call on Leader Schumer to leave his leadership position.
And in dodging your question, let me just say, it's important for people to know, you know, when it's time to go.
Bennett said he didn't think the message was clear to the public what Democrats were fighting for, and said there would be conversations in the foreseeable future about Democratic leadership. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News, Golden, Colorado.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. NPR has learned that President Trump is poised to sign an executive action today. This directs the U.S. Secretary of Education to move toward closing the Department of Education and giving oversight to the states. This move has been expected for weeks, and about half of the Education Department's staff has already been told they're being laid off. The federal D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has rejected a computer scientist's bid to copyright a piece of art. It was made by artificial intelligence. NPR's Bobby Allen reports the plaintiff plans to appeal to the Supreme Court.
The Federal Appeals Court wrote, "This case presents a question made salient by recent advances in artificial intelligence. Can a non-human machine be an author under the Copyright Act of 1976? Its answer, no. And that's because the 49-year-old law says only a work made by a human can be copyrighted. The Missouri computer scientist Stephen Thayer says he guided his AI to create an image called A Recent Entrance to Paradise, and the AI deserves to own it. The Copyright Office has granted copyright to work assisted by AI, but Thayer says the AI itself should be an author. The federal appeals court rejected this. Thayer says he is appealing. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
Food and beverage corporation Nestle USA is recalling some of its frozen meals made by Stouffer's and Lean Cuisine. The company says a few batches could be contaminated by what it calls wood-like material. There's a report that one person had a potential choking incident. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kresge Foundation. Established 100 years ago, the Kresge Foundation works to expand equity and opportunity in cities across America. A century of impact, a future of opportunity. More at Kresge.org.
In the weeks and months to come, as public radio faces federal funding cuts, KEXE is doubling down on our coverage of what happens here in northern Minnesota. I'm Heidi Holton. We're also working to be more transparent so you know exactly how we are funded. Here's Sarah Bignell, our CEO.
It's just a lot of unknowns, and I've been sitting in on tons of calls and meetings, and all of us had questions, but there's not a lot of answers to them. Sometimes it's hard to tune out the dread that exists. We can do what we can control, right? And so I think getting out the message of support now for us is really important, whether it's you can give us dollars or whether it's you can go and promote the good work that we're doing and spread the word of what we're doing to your friends, neighbors, coworkers, can go a long way as well.
KEXE.org. Read the stories about where you live and help us out. The people of northern Minnesota are our largest single source of funding.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. Coming up, we'll speak with one of two Democratic commissioners the Trump administration fired from the Federal Trade Commission yesterday. But first, Israel has launched a new ground invasion into Gaza.
That's expanding what it says is a new offensive in the enclave after it broke the nearly two-month-long ceasefire with Hamas. On Tuesday, there were a series of airstrikes that killed more than 400 Palestinians and wounded hundreds more.
We're joined now by NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Kat, so what can you tell us about the ground invasion and what's happening?
So Israel is calling this a, quote, targeted ground operation into central and southern Gaza. But we've heard that language from the Israeli military before. It was used a lot in Gaza before the ceasefire, and that invasion caused widespread devastation and destruction and killed more than 49,000 Palestinians, according to health officials there. The Israeli military said its aim with this ground invasion is to expand what it calls the, quote, security perimeter that separates Gaza from southern Israel. Israel has also sent troops back into areas that they had retreated from during the ceasefire, like the Netzarim Corridor. That's a large strip of land that divides Gaza's north and south. Early on in the war, Israel created that corridor and then closed passage for Palestinians between the north and south for more than a year. Just this morning, it partially closed passage again.
Now, what have you been hearing from Palestinians living in Gaza and the situation around them?
Yeah, I mean, people are worried and scared. Many had just started trying to pick up what they could of their lives during that 8 weeks of relative calm. And they're now shocked to be back in the war with airstrikes and evacuation orders again. You know, it's important to remember that Israel has been blocking all aid, including electricity, into Gaza for more than 2 weeks now, trying to pressure Hamas into accepting a new ceasefire deal on different terms than were agreed to back in January. And there are still ongoing Israeli airstrikes. At least 70 people were killed yesterday, according to Gaza Civil Defense, and more were reported overnight. Our producer in Gaza, Anas Baba, spoke to one woman in Gaza City. She's a grandma named Saif Al-Hurra. She says her son and his whole family were killed earlier in the war, and now the building she was staying in with three of her grandchildren was damaged in these strikes. You can hear the pain and anger in her voice there. She said, this is a calamity. We can't take it anymore.
What are Israeli government officials saying?
Israel Defense Minister Israel Katz put out a video statement yesterday addressing it to Gaza residents. He spoke in Hebrew with Arabic subtitles, and he told them that this is their, quote, final warning, saying that all the hostages must be released and Hamas must be removed from power. He said, what comes next will be much harsher, and you will bear the full consequences. He went on to say that Israel will act, quote, with force beyond anything you have ever seen.
Okay, and how did Hamas respond?
Well, Hamas has not yet responded militarily. In a statement on the militant group's Telegram last night, it says it holds Israel, quote, fully responsible for the repercussions of this ground invasion. And it reiterated its commitment to the ceasefire agreement, making it clear that Palestinians will not leave Gaza voluntarily or otherwise.
All right. That's NPR's Kat Lonsdorf in Tel Aviv. Kat, thank you very much for your reporting on this.
Thanks so much.
The Trump administration fired two Democratic commissioners on the Federal Trade Commission yesterday. Now both say they plan to sue. The FTC is an independent government agency responsible for policing corporate America and enforcing consumer protection laws. Antitrust groups are alarmed over the firing, saying not only are they illegal, they're a gift to the president's wealthiest supporters. Here's how White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt explained the move to reporters.
Because the time was right to let these people go, and the president absolutely has the authority to do it.
I'm joined now in studio by one of the Democratic commissioners who was fired, Alvaro Bedoya. Good morning, and thank you for being on the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We heard the White House press secretary say the president has absolutely the authority to do what he did to you. What do you say to that?
What's really interesting about that is the press secretary gives no reason whatsoever for why we're fired, no cause. Mm-hmm. And yet the Supreme Court has said, in a case that remains good law today, we can only be removed for neglect, malfeasance, or inefficiency. This is a naked power grab on behalf of the president, and it's going to open the door, as you indicated, for corruption and corporate giveaways, I think, for his top donors.
How are you told you were fired, and were you given a reason?
It was just after work. I'd arrived at my daughter's gymnastics class, and I got a call from my colleague, Commissioner Slaughter, telling me to check my email that she'd just been fired, or allegedly fired. And I opened up my email, and sure enough, there was an email from the president claiming, or president's staff claiming to fire me. No reason given whatsoever.
No reason given whatsoever. And just to let the listeners know, you were nominated under former President Biden. Your colleague, Rebecca Slaughter, was nominated under Trump's first administration.
That's right.
Both of you terminated before your terms were up. Now, the FTC historically has five members, right?
Yes.
No more than three from the same political party. Mm. Mark Meador, who was Trump's pick to fill the third Republican spot, has not yet been confirmed by the Senate. Can the commission function with just two members, both from the same party, as the president?
It absolutely can. And I think that's what folks are missing here, because any one of the cases we have right now, we're suing the largest provider of multifamily rental units in the country for packing their rent bills with hidden junk fees. Mm-hmm. We are trying to ban subscription traps that keep people from being able to unsubscribe from something unless they call like every other Tuesday between 10 a.m. and noon. We're suing John Deere for screwing over ranchers and farmers, preventing them from fixing their tractors, making them take it to the dealership. Any one of those cases, any one of those rules can be withdrawn by the current commissioners who the president says are on the commission, although I would say I'm still there myself.
Now, you've said billionaires and Trump associates will benefit. Specifically, who could benefit, how and why, with just two people from the same party on this commission?
Think about the billionaires who are over President Trump's shoulder at the inauguration. Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos. I am currently suing or enforcing court orders against each of their companies. Amazon, for example, we're suing for ripping off small business sellers on their site such that the company pockets up to 50 cents of every dollar they make on that site and makes it nearly impossible for them to offer consumers lower prices off the site. I'm also sitting as a judge in a matter where staff is alleging that pharmacy middlemen are jacking up the price of insulin illegally. Any one of these actions could be withdrawn by the folks who the president says are currently at the commission. And here's the thing, even if they oppose that, it doesn't matter. In a world where the president can fire anyone at any time, if they can, they have a choice. They can either obey, or if they say no, what will happen to them is what has just happened to me.
Now, some Trump allies generally, some people who may be listening to you right now will say the president has the right to put his own people in place and get rid of those he doesn't want. What do you say to those Americans?
I say that this is about corruption and corporate pardons. Again, let's go back to Amazon. We're already seeing this kind of conduct happen. One of the last public statements I made about Amazon was calling out how they treated their warehouse workers on the factory floor. These folks work so fast, so hard, that their hands stop working, their shoulders tear, their backs bulge and break. And yet, Amazon has donated $1 million, cut a deal with the First Lady that'll flow, according to the New York Post, $28 million into her pockets. And now the person nominated to lead the Occupational Safety and Health Administration is a former Amazon executive. Mm. There is every reason to think that these billionaires are going to use their power to shut down the lawsuits they don't like that hurt small business sellers, that hurt people who are struggling to pay for their medicine. So this is not about a unitary executive. This is about corporate pardons and corruption for these folks who have sent hundreds of millions of dollars into the president's pockets.
And really quickly, I mean, you talked about your concern that these firings will set a precedent that anybody can be fired at any time. Are you optimistic that you'll be reinstated if you sue?
I am optimistic, and people need to understand, if I can be removed for any reason at any time, so can Jerome Powell at the Fed. And so it's not just about small businesses and consumers. It's also about retirees and investors and their life savings in the stock market.
Alvaro Bedoya, thank you for joining us.
After a phone call with President Trump yesterday, the leaders of Russia and Ukraine have agreed to stop striking each other's energy infrastructure as part of a limited ceasefire deal. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is pushing for a total ceasefire that would include civilian infrastructure. So far, the Kremlin has not agreed. Here's NPR's Eleanor Beardsley.
Hello, Taras. I meet Taras Yatsenko in his upscale neighborhood in the western Ukrainian city of Lviv.
So I live like a few blocks from here.
Last September, he was asleep in his house with his wife and three daughters when the air raid sirens began to wail. They heard swarms of drones overhead and knew missiles were on their way because of an app Ukrainians have on their phones.
My kids started crying, shouting, and they said, "Oh, Daddy, let's go to the basement." You know, you had a very short time to make it your decision. Should you go down to the basement or should you still stay here? Because, you know, missile, it takes just seconds. So I said, no, we stay here.
Seconds later, a hypersonic Kinzhal missile shook their house, but they were fine. A few blocks over, the Bazilevich family wasn't so lucky. 43-year-old Yevhenia and her three daughters were killed in their stairwell while running to their basement. Today, there are pictures and a shrine with candles and teddy bears outside their damaged, boarded-up house. President Zelensky is seeking a broader ceasefire to include residential areas like this one, as well as ports and railways. He spoke to the media last night. We had 107 Shahed drones in the skies tonight, said Zelensky, and I'm afraid that will continue until we get an agreement, hopefully a broader one. Zelensky said he felt Trump had really listened to him on last night's phone call. The U.S., Ukraine, and Russian officials are expected to meet in the coming days in Saudi Arabia to figure out how to implement the partial ceasefire deal, though it's unclear when it would take effect. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kyiv.
This is NPR News.
Good morning. morning. It's 6:19. You're tuned in to the Thursday Morning Show with a mix of Morning Edition from National Public Radio and local conversations like what's coming up next with Jeff Sundin. We're talking ice fishing. Yes, there's still ice fishing going on. I'm Heidi Holton. Hope you're having a good morning. We are, let's take a look at the weather around our region. Right now we're seeing 20 degrees in Grand Rapids and Brainerd, Bemidji at 18, Hibbing at 18, Aiken reporting 17, Park Rapids at 19, looking like 13 in Northolme and Bedette, and Aiken reporting 17 degrees this morning. We are expecting temperatures, though, to get up to 45 to 50. There'll be breezy winds becoming southwest 10 to 25 miles an hour. And evening lows in the mid-20s to low 30s. There is a slight chance for some flurries tonight. And a chance of snow early tomorrow with mostly cloudy skies. Becoming sunny, highs 30 to 40 degrees. Could have winds gusting up to 25 and evening lows from 5 to 13 degrees. And mostly sunny by Saturday, highs in the mid-30s to low 40s with Saturday night. Could possibly see some rain and snow, some accumulation possible. Lows in the mid to 20s to low 30s. We've got a lot going on for you this morning, including at 7:45. You're going to want to tune in. We are talking with News Director Chelsea Perkins. It's a big week in news for the state of Minnesota, but especially for this region. We'll be learning more about the arrest of Senator Justin Eichhorn and the coverage our newsroom is doing of that, as well as a preview of tomorrow when there is a memorial and anniversary of the shootings at Red Lake Schools 20 years ago. Stay tuned, a lot going on today. 1 o'clock, we've got our volunteer Judy Gruey hosting On the River. Before that, though, at 9 o'clock, it's Headwaters with DJ Dang. Up next, we're going fishing.
Gone fishing. There's a sign up on your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. Each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing me.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You're bothering me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing,
bop a baby, bop a baby,
oh, yeah.
It's time to talk fishing. Every Thursday morning, we check in with Jeff Sundin, a fishing guide from the Grand Rapids area. Morning, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having a place to be.
You're welcome. Sometimes it's nice, isn't it, to know to pay attention to things like that. We get to talk every week. Let's talk about this ice fishing season. It is not done yet, is it?
I've been. We have a family trip coming up this weekend, and I've been running interference against a couple people who are all concerned and worried that there's not going to be enough ice and we won't be able to figure out where to go. Let me just say, I put up a fishing report not more than an hour ago from the folks at Arrowhead Outdoors up in Ely. They have up to 36 inches of ice still remaining on some of their lakes. Now the deep, like the lake trout lakes, what would be a good example in our neck of the woods? Well, Pokegama is not a bad one. Caribou Lake or the Canisteo Pit, something like that. Deep water that freezes late and has relatively low snow cover and so on. Those lakes may be down to 20, 22 inches of ice. So even that is more than enough. On a lot of the lakes, if you could get the first 25 or 30 yards away from the shoreline, you could probably still drive vehicles on a lot of lakes around. The problem with that is you get these sloppy conditions at the landing from just dirt and grime on vehicles and road salt and so on and so forth. The landings deteriorate first, and so you have this trouble of getting out onto the lake. But once you're there, I've been checking in on some of the local, Whitty, for example. They're still allowing ATV traffic out on most of the rental roads over there. There's a couple of spots that are tricky because of a large ice crack that's developed. So some of the resorts on the east side have limited access, but they're still allowing folks out. Snowmobile is one thing. And, of course, Jeff Sundin, the only thing that he has to drive around on the ice is a snowmobile, and it's going to be completely useless for a while here unless we start to get some kind of a snow buildup. There's nothing but ice out there. So folks pretty much throughout the region, anywhere from northeastern Minnesota all the way up to Lake of the Woods right now, are basically saying, if you got a snowmobile, just leave it at home. That's not going to get you around. So if you don't have a four-wheeler, an ATV, side-by-side, something like that, then you're going to do like what we'll do this weekend is going to be to just strap on the cleats and start walking. We're going to look for places that we can go and fish just on foot. That'll make life a lot simpler for everybody in our family anyhow. So, and this is the time of year where that's kind of a good way to get around anyhow, just to be safe. There's plenty of ice out there, but why take a chance? I did notice on the Ely report, because of the cold or the warm weather that they've had and some rain that fell a few days back, there are some areas where the current starts to develop, neck down areas between, let's say, a shoreline point and a wider open spot on a lake, or between two islands, creeks that come into the lakes. Any place where if you're suspicious that there's a little bit of moving water, stay clear of those, because even that moving water is going to... It travels quite a way under the ice, and we don't see it with our eyes. I may have told you this story in the past, but a friend and I went up to Rainy Lake one time about this time of year because we wanted to get in on the late ice fishing for Northern Pike, and everybody was still driving, and we drove the pickup truck out most of the way, and then we saw a little stretch of ice that was between an island and the main shoreline. And just to make sure that we were safe, we stopped the truck, drilled a hole. There was 24 inches of ice, walked over to the spot that was between the island and the shoreline, drilled another hole, and there was 6 inches of ice. So if we wouldn't have stopped and checked that out, we could have hit the jackpot and been able to tell the story about the time that we put the truck through the ice on Rainy Lake. But so what I'm saying is be real careful where you see places that look like they could be suspicious. Anything with a current, I wouldn't even walk on those until you know that drilled some holes and make sure that you can have a firsthand assessment of how thick the ice is underneath you.
You know, I was talking with my brother yesterday. He was here. He was talking similar things. He had fished on Mille Lacs, and that it's kind of about getting out there, that a lot of the accesses by resorts were closed. But he went early in the morning, so things were fine. But there's plenty of ice out there, but it's kind of what time you go and how to get there is kind of the hard thing.
Yep, that's it. And like I say, walking is the guaranteed, the easy way to do it. And even on a lake like Mille Lacs, now there's places to fish this time of the year where the perch fishing is typically pretty good, and they're not all that far away from shore, even though it's a gigantic lake and it sounds like a daunting task. There are places where you can park and get off, especially on the west side along Highway 169. There's quite a number of places that you hoof it to a spot and have a chance of of being able to catch some fish. So I wouldn't think about going out there with any heavy duty stuff. Usually a four wheeler, you can figure out some way to work around, go up the shoreline a little bit or something like that and figure out a place where the ice is still solid. For me, I've been able to find places like that, fishing on Leech Lake and Winnie, where you can, anything that you need to cart out, you can bring with you in a sled, and you can walk to some pretty good, I would say, way above average fishing spots that you can get to on foot without having to worry about having a lot of stuff. So a little bit of legwork, a little bit of research looking into it. But, you know, folks are out there fishing. It's not that hard to see where people are going and where they're not going. And in perch fishing, for example, around us, we maybe have five or six lakes that are worth the trouble of going to this time of year anyway. So it's not as hard to find them as it sounds like it might be. So just drive around, take a little look. And if you really, really want a little point in the right direction, do me shoot me a sweet text or a very polite email, and I may even share a fishing tip or whatever. Don't come across like you think I owe it to you. But, you know, if you ask me for a favor, I might be able to do it.
Well, we had talked, Itasca Waters recently had a webinar, and it had a conversation with John Downing from professor of biology, and with he's the director of Minnesota Sea Grant, and he has this formula for figuring out when the ice will go out. You were interested in that. Where are you at with it?
Yeah, well, I did a little report last week with Carrie because I did tune into that webinar and listen to it and follow up and do some more research on the subject and so on and so forth. Now, in between last Thursday and now, I think if you look on my report around March 16th, there's a report where I did had received a picture of open water Lake Washington down by Mankato. And after I got that picture, it piqued my curiosity to see, you know, how that would stack up with the ice out clock or calendar that they have on the Sea Grant website. And also, for folks that aren't familiar with it, the DNR has got an ice out map on their website. So I put together in that article, there's links to both things. And I'll explain the ice out clock on that particular day. I checked it to get the prediction for Lake Washington and Mankato. And the ice out clock was right on the money. It said the ice is either already out or ice out is imminent when I checked it. And then I went and checked the ice out map on the DNR website, and that had not been updated yet. That was a weekend. So it may have been updated immediately. I put on the Season Watch page this morning, just to give folks the idea we were going to be talking about this, I put an image of the state. The DNR map is a user-supported map. When you see the ice go off a lake in your neck of the woods and you want to report it, you can go right on to the DNR Facebook page and you can report that the ice has gone off the lake. They verify that, and then they update it on the map. So you can kind of track the progression. Right now, it's about up to the Twin Cities general neighborhood of lakes that the ice out. Now, that one, it was not updated at the time. I suspect it wasn't too far behind. So I just, out of my own curiosity, I did another quick search this morning just of some of the popular lakes to get an idea what the prediction might be for ice out in our neck of the woods. Winnebagoche, according to the ice out clock, April 15th is what they're calling for as the date. Lake of the Woods, further north, they're talking April 30th. So we still have got a solid, if that holds true, we got a solid 10, 12 days of ice fishing before conditions start to deteriorate. You know, you can't ice fish right up until the time the ice goes out, but it takes a while. And we've been getting, like you said, we've been getting these chilly nights. It's been freezing things back up again. And then most of the day it takes to warm up enough to deteriorate anything. That tends to extend things for a while. So I'm thinking, looks like we've got a little time. I think I checked split hand too while I was at it, just because it's in our backyard and I'm always interested in that lake. That was April 18th. And these are all, they give you a range, whether the it's based on how much snow cover there are and the cooling days and the heating days, and how they make their predictions is all really interesting. They promised, when I watched that, when I tuned into that webinar, they promised to have a link to be able to go back and see it. And in my article a few days ago, I did mention that they've got links to, apparently they had similar presentations over the past few years. They've got links to 2022 and 23 and 24, but the link to 2025 wasn't done yet. So sooner or later, you'll be able to see the entire presentation for yourself. But as far as I know, at this time, it's not quite available just yet.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about a fishing summit that is coming up next week in the Grand Rapids area.
This is important because all the things that we've been talking about lately are going to get discussed at this. The DNR Fisheries Chief Brad Parsons, I know, is one of the higher level DNR officials that's going to be at this meeting. And the MinFish organization itself consists of some high level professional anglers, people in the fishing industry, so on and so forth. It wouldn't surprise me to see a good number of people that all have got influence in one form or another. Things that are on, I see in the agenda, things that are going to be discussed for sure that will be really interesting to folks that are listening this morning. The forward-facing sonar, this is a thing that's getting to be more of a thing. The topic of conversation is intensifying around that. And that's going to be a main thing at this angler summit. The reduction, the walleye bag limit, I think also the possession limit is in play again, and that's on the agenda. A couple of other things that concern, we've been talking lately about bait supplies and whether there's going to be enough minnows and where you can get them and how you can get them. Everybody that's been involved in those discussions is going to be at this meeting also. There's a good chance that that's going to come up. And if it doesn't come up as a part of the normal agenda item, it just goes to show the reason why you should be at this meeting. Because if you want to bring it up, there will be plenty. I've been at three or four of these so far now, and there's more than ample time for people to express their concerns. It's not like going to a DNR meeting where they keep everything under kind of tight control. This is, the DNR is here, they're involved in it, but it's not their meeting, so they don't have quite as tight a control over the questions and answers and commentary and so on and so forth. I've been following along. They sent out first invitations to people that are members and so on. Then they sent out public invitations, and I see through the use of their social media pages, they're still offering opportunity to sign up for it. Theoretically, we're past the deadline, but I think that they've still got some space. It's going to be at the Timberlake Hotel next Thursday. And according to what I've seen in the last 2 days or so, they're still accepting people that would like to be. And it's just a simple RSVP. There's no cost to do it. They want to know if you're coming or not because they're going to provide lunch. And they want to know how many people they're going to feed. But otherwise, it's free to the public as long as there's still a place to sit.
And where to find that to sign up again? At the
The easiest way to do it, I just put it on my website.
Okay.
With I've got links. Everything we've talked about this morning, I've already updated it today, and there's links to all of it, including the sign-up form. And again, if you go to the website and it's too hard to find something, pester me about it. My email and my text number and everything is on every single page, so it's very easy to get in touch with me if you want a quick update about something. Just go ahead and shoot me a note, and I am pretty good about getting back to folks when it comes to that.
All right, and Jeff's website is jeffsundin.com. Before we let you go, ideas for fishing this weekend?
Well, if you're like me and you just want to get some action, we're gonna do a little walking and we're gonna try to target perch. But if you want a big adventure, this is the time. It's a little bit of a truck to get up there, but anywhere from Baudette all the way over to War Road, any place on Lake of the Woods where there's an access, if you're in any kind of proximity to a creek or a little small river that feeds into Lake of the Woods, right now is when these big northern pike start moving into their spawning territory. And I'm seeing some pictures of some really monster pike that are getting caught. Just yesterday, the Lake of the Woods report said that there are several people that are catching 40-inch plus northern pike through the ice. It's not really too hard to do it. You can just do it with tip-ups, or you can do it with a hook and line, too. But any place where there's a little moving water, the river going into the lake at Baudette, for example, or I guess it's coming out of the lake, technically, that's a spot. Zippo Bay is a spot. Near War Road has some spots. Just look at the map and watch for these little feeder creeks. That's where the pike are heading. And just get out on the ice in that general neck of the woods. And this is probably one of the 2 weeks out of a year that's the best possible chance of catching a big pike through the ice. So that'd be one thing I would recommend for folks that are interested in a little bigger adventure.
All right. Sounds great. You can find lots of information at jeffsundin.com. Have a great weekend. I'll be curious to hear how it goes next week.
Okay, we'll give you the full report.
Sounds good. If you are headed out, if you've been ice fishing, you can text us, tell us how it's been, or yeah, hopefully, as Jeff is warning us, be very careful about how you're moving around on the lake. Still, most lakes have plenty of thickness of ice, but getting out there, or if it's a lake that a river runs into, you might find it kind of unpredictable. So be careful is the main message we're hearing. We would like to thank our business supporters, and that includes Harmony Food Co-op in Bemidji. They partner with local farms for over 2 decades to provide fresh and local foods, promoting sustainability through local buying. Open daily from 8 to 8. More at harmonyfoods.coop. You can also find them on Facebook. Coming up on National Native News, we're learning about the final okay that is stalled in Congress about a bill setting up the Truth and Healing Commission for Indian boarding school policies. Stay tuned for that story. Current conditions, we're seeing fair skies are clear around most of the region, 19 in Park Rapids right now, 20 in Brainerd and Grand Rapids, Bemidji at 18, and Hibbing also reporting 18 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Final okay is stalled in Congress on a bill setting up the Truth and Healing Commission for Indian Boarding School Policies. This week, a tribal leader in Wisconsin asked state legislators for help in getting that measure passed. Chuck Kornbach of station WUWM reports.
The bipartisan legislation would establish a federal commission to investigate the U.S. government's role in Indian boarding school systems, an era that began during the 1800s. The measure would also lead to more research into the school's effect on Native American communities and help identify pathways to healing from the cultural genocide critics of the schools say the institutions were designed to commit. Late last year, the U.S. Senate passed the measure, but the House of Representatives has yet to do so. During an annual State of Wisconsin Tribes speech to the Wisconsin legislature, St. Croix Chippewa Indians of Wisconsin Chairman Thomas Fowler spoke about the topic. He urged the Republican-controlled state body to encourage the GOP-controlled House to act on the bill, calling it critical for Native communities.
The tragedy of boarding schools requires remembrance so that the spirits of our ancestors are not lost or forgotten. We have a duty to afford them dignity and respect, to address the loss they suffered, oftentimes while being alone.
Fowler says he's not trying to criticize all of today's non-Indian politicians for what happened in the past.
I recognize that not all the people in this room are responsible for those detrimental past policies, but each of us have an opportunity and, quite frankly, an obligation to ensure that history never repeats itself.
The U.S. Catholic bishops have wanted representation on the Boarding Schools Commission. The bishops say that healing and reconciliation are only possible if all parties are involved. St. Croix Chairman Fowler also called on the Wisconsin legislature to support additional state policies expanding Native American education and legalizing medical marijuana. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
Alaska experts on energy, housing, and infrastructure say billions of dollars in limbo from President Trump's federal funding freezes are affecting local projects like heat pump distribution and building infrastructure to protect against storm surges and tsunamis. Representatives from Alaska-based organizations held a joint press conference last week. They said more than $5 billion are at risk from the bipartisan infrastructure law and over $720 million from the Inflation Reduction Act. Those numbers are a moving target, given some programs have been frozen and unfrozen irregularly. Tashina Duddle works at Deerstone Consulting, which supports tribal energy infrastructure projects across Alaska. She says many grants that are now frozen were for projects to prevent shore erosion and stabilize villages against permafrost melt and flooding. One program through the Bureau of Indian Affairs supports tribally-led climate adaptation. It's allocated $72 million in funding for nearly 40 Alaskan tribal projects, but is now on pause.
Without this funding, villages will be lost to erosion, infrastructure will collapse under worsening climate conditions, communities will have to relocate without a plan, without resources, and without dignity.
Duddle adds that the projects also create crucial economic opportunities in rural communities, like construction jobs. Agencies are unsure what projects will be able to move forward and what spending will be reimbursed. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It's 6:47. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Kari Hepland. Good morning.
Good morning. March 20th.
March 20th, and it's even just slightly lighter than it was last week.
Yeah.
When you were off last week, Malachi and I were on, and both of us, it was like shockingly dark last Thursday morning when I came in. And today is just a little bit lighter.
Yeah. Looking at the moon right now.
I know. It was really pretty coming in this morning.
Yeah.
It's going to be sunny today, warmer than yesterday. Highs 45 to about 50 degrees and breezy winds 10 to 25 miles per hour. Do you know what was perfect about yesterday being frozen?
Being frozen?
Well, the ground froze again yesterday.
Oh, okay.
And like everything, it was just chillier yesterday.
Right.
Do you want to know what was so great about that?
Yeah.
I picked up all the dog poop. And I am going to tell you,
it's much easier when it's frozen.
Oh, give me that any day over.
I have a feeling that's probably a nice task for you, a repetitive motion that you see progress and it's a good thing to get done.
My body felt good afterwards. It was gross and I really did not enjoy it. But you know what?
I don't mean you enjoy cleaning.
I feel great about it being done.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yes, that's like me after going, you know, to the Y or something.
Right.
I don't really feel like doing it, but I feel really good afterwards.
And it's garbage pickup today, so what could be better?
I know. And I forgot to put my garbage out.
Oh, Tom.
I know. It's usually my deal, but we don't have that much garbage. Anyway, that's too much information about me.
Well, and I my just garbage. Talked about dog poop, so we're here revealing all the things, Heidi.
Yes, we are. We've got a lot going on this morning. We're going to be checking in with Chelsea Perkins in about an hour, and she's helping us get up to date on the, it's become a national story, Senator Justin Eichhorn, arrested, I believe still in jail right now. She'll give us the latest on that.
We are also going to be talking about gaming addiction. There's a webinar coming up today, actually, at 6 o'clock tonight. So we're going to be speaking with the person who's speaking from the Line of Health. So that'll
be coming up. Dr. Nathan David, man with two names.
David Nathan.
I knew I was getting that. We'll be kind of talking more about that. And I think also just generally screen time in general and what that means. I know when I'm kind of stressed out, I was in a mode of playing a lot of Scrabble on my phone, you know, and it feels good to like take your mind off of things. And again, I'm not probably that's not the main culprit is word games on your phone, but it also does feel like too much because you get it in your head and you just keep going, you know? It's crazy.
Or you can kind of see it when you go to sleep. Have you ever had?
Yes, I have seen that.
I mean, that even happens to me with puzzles sometimes, but, but yes, I think this is, as a parent in today's world, this is a constant conversation in our house, and the effects of it are real. And but also, like, not just for kids. This is like so widespread.
Yeah,
among adults
for sure. Well, it's kind of that interesting thing, isn't it? When you hear people start to go, "Well, kids are on the screens too much these days." Walk into any coffee shop or restaurant. Who's on their phones?
Yeah,
it's the adults.
Or in social situations.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
But they're like, oh, it's bad for kids.
Yeah.
The adults say.
You know what? I had, my oldest turned 13 a couple weeks ago, and we had a birthday party for him, and there were 8 12 to 14-year-olds at our house for, you know, a 24-hour period, which, you know, is a lot, but when we were exhausted by Sunday. But these darn kids, I tell you what, they did not game for 1 second of the entire night. They played hide and seek for like 3 hours around in our garage. And I mean, it was a different variation of hide and seek.
Yeah.
A cooler version of it, let's say.
Yeah, of course.
Nerf wars. There was football outside. There was like, and it was crummy, like the, you know, so wet out in the yard. So it wasn't like great weather for that. But they, this was on their own accord.
Yeah.
And I just left the night thinking, gosh, these are good kids.
Yeah.
So I also want to like put that there is really, these kids are not, it's not all screens and.
But it can affect mental health. And that's
100%.
That's what the local chapter of NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, that's why they've called in this doctor to talk about it today at 6 o'clock. And that's free and open to everyone, the webinar. But we'll be telling you more about it. He'll join us about 8:20 this morning. Programming is made possible in part by Lake Country Journal. They're a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscapes, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of their annual photo contest, which are also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions accepted all year round. LakeCountryJournal.com.
This is the set list on KAXC, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at March 21st and 22nd, Friday and Saturday this week, with shows in Gilbert, Chisholm, Park Rapids, and Duluth. Starting things off with Mark Joseph this Friday at the Ore House in Gilbert. The singer, guitarist, and Big Woo member is known for his soulful Americana and rootsy rock. The show this Friday will be a tribute to the music of Cat Stevens, with Joseph performing his 1970 album Tea for the Tillerman in full. It's this Friday, 8 p.m. at the Ore House in Gilbert. On Saturday, Morning Bird will be in Chisholm, playing Jim Sports Club at 6 p.m. Jill Burks and Rob Wheeler have recently added a rhythm section to their folk rock sound, Jim Pietola on drums and Shane Kingsland on bass. This will be their second show with the full band, Morning Bird, this Saturday, 6 o'clock in Chisholm. At 7 on Saturday, Forge North will be at the Armory Arts and Events Center in Park Rapids. led by singer and songwriter Charlie Wagner. They are a rootsy Americana jam band from Longville with heartfelt songs inspired by the nature of northern Minnesota. Alongside Wagner are multi-instrumentalist Tristan Schultz, pedal steel player Matt Gutzman, and brothers Garrett and Grant Radatz on keys and drums. At the same time, two Grammy Award-winning country artists will be in Duluth at the Amsoil Arena. Dwight Yoakam, who released his first album in 1986 and most recently Brighter Days in 2024, has won praise for his authentic Bakersfield and alt-country sound. Joining him in Duluth are the Mavericks, known for their eclectic style that draws from Tejano, 50s pop, and more, and for the deep voice of lead singer Raul Malo. Dwight Yoakam and the Mavericks in Duluth this Saturday. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
The set list, you hear it here on KAXE. Coming up at 9, Headwaters. Your host is DJ Dang this morning. Carrie, let's talk about Record Store Day.
Yeah, we have been doing this now for 10 years, something like that.
Yeah,
it's been quite some time. And in honor of Record Store Day worldwide, this was we started it at a time when there were no record shops in our area. We now have a couple. There are Kebs Records in Beauvais and Sundown Records in Bemidji, which is fabulous. And we're doing this in conjunction with them now, where it's just donated vinyl. You can donate vinyl to this sale. It's a really fun way to beef up your collection if you are just starting your collection or maybe missing that one Willie Nelson record that you don't have yet, Redheaded Stranger, and you want to get it in there. Come to Record Store Day. It's going to be on April 12th. It's the same day as all Record Store Day celebrations. It'll be at Rail River Folk School. And it's a fun day. There's a good energy in the room. There are some people looking for, there was one year, I think it was Dave Harrington, was looking for vinyl for an art project. He did a full wall of cover to cover.
Yeah.
Vinyl covers.
I'm looking at, because in Brainerd, there is a record store
that's
been there since I was a kid that I bought some of my first stuff at the gallery downtown.
Okay.
It's been there since 1971. It is still a record store and a clothing store and that kind of thing. But I'm looking at photos of the store and they have an art display of the records. If you look down at the last photos in the website. But anyway, yes, records have been popular for quite a while now, the comeback. It's not new, but people are loving them. And it's, you know, when we talked about collections last week, that's what a lot of people talked about was their vinyl, or 2 weeks ago or something like that. So,
yep. It's a burgeoning industry. I mean, there are only a couple vinyl plants and there are now new ones starting there's one in Minneapolis now, there's one in Nashville. So that's exciting to see this form of music, a music medium that is still actually doing really well.
So you have a record player at home.
Right.
How often do you use it?
We go in phases with it. It seems to be something that we use a ton for a while and then just kind of goes quiet for a little bit and we just use our regular speaker system. My Anders just got his first couple records. So that's been fun to kind of introduce him how to, use the needle, how to handle vinyl, those kinds of essentials that you need to know.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's fun. And we'd love to see you there April 12th, Record Store Day. And again, donate. If you have records that you don't listen to, we'd love to take those donations and use them for a sale. It's just a fundraiser for KAXE.
Only vinyl, not CDs or
we do accept cassettes? CDs, cassettes. We do accept CDs and cassettes. They don't move as well. The one thing with CDs is KAXE and KBXE are missing some real gems of records too, CDs. And so sometimes we use those to help beef up our libraries, which is another benefit. So.
All right. Coming up, we're going to have the Up North Report, local news from our region. Some things going on. There is auditions. The Northern Lights Opera Company has a summer musical coming up, Once Upon a Mattress. This is in Park Rapids at the Armory Arts and Events Center. The auditions are tomorrow at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 1 p.m. You can find more information at northernlightopera.org.
We receive support from the Blandin Foundation, strengthening rural Minnesota. More at blandinfoundation.org. Also want to thank Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, offering decades of experience to guide your real estate journey from buying or selling to land or lakeshore. Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, be moved. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
Sunny today with highs 45 to 50, breezy winds becoming southwest 10 to 25, evening lows in the mid-20s to low 30s, and tomorrow chance of snow early, looking like right now. I mean, it's early, but Saturday night we could see some snow, and saying there could even be a little bit of accumulation, but it's early.
Yeah.
You never know, especially this time of year. We were emptying sap bags last night, and
they
all had big icicles in them. That
sure.
And the wind had been so much that some of them got blew off the trees before the sap weighed them down. And
so before it was running.
Oh, it's running, yeah. The minute we did this, which was Monday, I think, we put the taps in. Yeah, it was Monday. They ran the minute you put the tap in.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, we were.